What? People are warning about Christian terrorism here in America?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, it's true. What he said is completely false, but it's true that he said it. Dr. Warren J. Blumenfeld, writing on LGBTQNation.com. Quote, one of America's biggest threats is radical Christian terrorists. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not happy with the fact that we put such emphasis on Islamic terrorist or, quote, radical Islamic terrorist. He wants us to focus on the, quote, Christian terrorist, radical Christian terrorist. Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later in the broadcast. But friends, I've heard this rhetoric for some time now, that Christians who stand for conservative moral values, that we are the Taliban, that we are Al-Qaeda, that we are ISIS. Yeah, they're sick and ugly and ridiculous charges, but oh, look, Timothy McVeigh, Oklahoma City bomber, he was Christian and so on, all of this nonsense, which is factually not true and philosophically ridiculous. But we'll talk about it because these charges are out there. They are in the air, so to say. You'll hear them more and more. So we'll talk about that a little later in the broadcast. If you'd like to weigh in, the number is always 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All this week, we're having special guests on the broadcast with me who were part of the team involved with translating, producing, distributing the new Tree of Life version of the Bible, which Pastor Jack Hayford referred to as a miracle in motion. Baker Books, as you will know if you've been listening this week, has now taken over distribution and production of this new Bible translation, which means that there is an opportunity to reach, a massively larger audience than we've ever reached with this brand new translation. And they put it out in some beautiful editions. We'll tell you how you can get hold of one with a free DVD in a few minutes. But I'll be speaking shortly with Dan Juster, one of the leaders in the Messianic Jewish movement, a pioneer since the early 1970s. We'll get his take on these issues and some important Messianic Jewish-related questions. You'll be fascinated by his insights. I wish we had 20 hours to talk to Dan because of his spiritual depth and insight. But before that, some really neat news. A couple months ago, I flew into New York City with one purpose only. It was to record a special edition of my testimony for the I Met Messiah website YouTube channel. Some of the testimonies there of Jewish believers have gone viral. One of them viewed more than 1.5 million times. And they asked me to record my testimony. So it was a matter of me telling my story. And then they had to edit it down to a manageable size. And anyway, I am blown away with the final production. I mean, with sound effects and background music and captions and the way the thing was edited and put together is just amazing. And it's taken off. It just went live earlier this morning, and it's taking off. You can watch it on my Facebook page. Oh, you'll be blessed. The story of this hippie, Jewish, rock drumming, heroin shooting, LSD using teenage rebel coming to faith in Jesus, the Messiah. Maybe you're listening now and you knew me back then. Maybe you were part of the little Italian Pentecostal church that helped pray me into the kingdom. But you'll be blessed by the testimony. You'll probably want to share it with others, Jew and Gentile alike. So watch it on my Facebook page. Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K, D-R Brown. Share it with others. We'll be right back with Dan Juster.
Thank you. Join Dr. Michael Brown along with Messianic Jewish pastor Scott Volk for a unique behind-the-scenes tour of Israel, February 25th through March 6, 2017. Space is limited, so we're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip and to secure your spot, please visit our website at AskDrBrown.org and click on the Israel Tour banner or call our office at 704-782-3760.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. If you can join me in Israel, sign up today. Go to the website, AskDrBrown.org. You'll see it right on the home page, the Israel banner. Click on there for more info. It's really going to be the trip of a lifetime. I'll have great opportunities to be with you, doing some special teaching and different sites and participating in some of the special activities, having some meals together. We'll be doing some public meetings as well. You'll be able to be part of those. You can join me sitting in behind the scenes as we do live radio from Israel. And then, of course, all the wonderful, amazing things that you see on the tour. As the Bible comes alive, as ancient history comes alive, as future history before it happens comes alive. So join me and my colleague and friend Scott Volk for what should be an amazing, amazing time. Again, find out more about that, AskDrBrown.org. It'll be from February 25th to March 6th. So now's the time to plan. Get your deposit in. 866-34-TRUTH. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. As I've been mentioning, the Tree of Life version of the Bible has now been officially taken over by Baker Books. When the vision to produce this new Messianic Jewish translation came forward, it was just pretty much on its own. In other words, a vision to get this out, to get it done, to produce this brand new thing that had never been done before. But how do you get it distributed? And well, there's been amazing favor on it. But for one of the largest Christian publishers in the world, Baker Books, to say this is a translation that we're going to use, this is a translation that we're going to produce the Bibles for and get it out, that was an amazing breakthrough. And there's a special ceremony that's going to be taking place in Jerusalem in just a few days, the beginning of this next week, with the official release. We've got a beautiful edition of a slimline, leather-like version of the Tree of Life Bible. And one of my dear friends and colleagues, Dr. Daniel Juster, has been a pioneer in the Messianic movement. He was involved in the Messianic movement before I knew it existed. He was involved in the Messianic movement when I had massive questions about it. And he's been on the front lines as a Messianic Jewish theologian for all of these decades and now divides his time between the United States and Israel. Dan, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you, Dr. Brown.
Well, Dan, when you would introduce someone to speak at our old home congregation in Maryland, Beth Messiah, you would always want to put things in a context. This is why this is significant, or there's something important with this group, networking with this group, or you always had a larger context for the moment. This is a pretty big issue now, this Messianic Jewish Bible, this team translation. Give us a context of the significance of this and the significance of Baker now taking it over.
Well, Dr. Brown, this is the only translation that is vetted by multiple biblical scholars, both Jewish and Christian, that have a Messianic Jewish orientation to interpreting the scriptures. That means that the way the headings are done, the way the language is done, probably takes into account the original Jewish context more than any other version, although, of course, today all versions seek to do that. But the Bible really has a tremendous effectiveness in connecting people to that Jewish-rooted context.
All right, and for Baker to now get involved with that, why is that so significant?
Well, Baker is both a major Christian publisher for books and a major Bible publisher. So Baker's involvement is saying this is a really credible translation. On the level of other translations that Baker realizes that is out there that they would be competing with, such as the New International Version or the American Standard, the New American Standard or the New American English, and different Bibles that are out there. So it brings this Bible to a shoulder-to-shoulder kind of parity to these other translations.
All right, Dan, on a larger theological level, these are issues you've dealt with for decades. Your book, Jewish Roots, is used to this day as essential reading in the Messianic Jewish movement. What's the difference between Gentile believers recovering the Jewish roots of the faith and Gentiles thinking that they have to be Jewish in order to please God?
Well, unfortunately, people that teach that don't understand that when the Gentile has accepted Jesus, he's raised to a parity level of priestly status with Jewish people. And this is priestly language that you see in Ephesians chapter 2, and it says, we are raised with him and seated with him in heavenly places. So we have access to the most holy place in heaven, even more than the Israelite priests had, who could not even themselves go into the Holy of Holies, only the high priest. So the New Testament relieves Gentiles of Jewish-specific responsibilities. That was probably even understood by Hillel in the first century. There's a difference between the universal application of the ethical teachings of the Torah versus the specific responsibilities of Jewish people that are connected to circumcision, the land problem, promises, the seasons that are clear in Israel. And one of the good things about this translation is it doesn't make any errors in being straightforward about those passages which clearly relieve Gentiles from those responsibilities.
All right, so someone can now be equal parity. No Jew or Gentile means that we have equal status in the Lord. There's no caste system. There's no class system. But a Gentile doesn't become a Jew when a Gentile gets saved, nor does a Jew become a Gentile. And yet through much of church history, that was almost required. If a Jew was going to be a follower of Jesus, that Jew would have to renounce anything Jewish and become completely Gentile in their practices in order to be accepted by the church. Having a Bible now that reconnects us with Jewish roots demolishes that error right there, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. And you can see in the passages like Romans 15 and Ephesians 3, both of which talk about the Gentiles' relationship to the Lord with his people. Romans says, rejoice, O Gentiles, with his people. And you see this passage in Ephesians 3, which says the Gentiles are now participants in the covenants with his people. And this is anticipated in the Abrahamic covenant. And this is why Paul says that Abraham is now the father of both the circumcised, because he was circumcised, but he walked with God before he was circumcised, so he can be the father of the uncircumcised. So you really have this idea that Jew and Gentile together, both still being Jew and Gentile, make up the one new man rather than being former Jews or former Gentiles.
And just like husband and wife, we can say there's no male nor female in the Messiah, and yet it's only a husband as being a male and a wife as being a female that can truly bring together the one flesh in marriage. It would be the same then in the body. Dan, have you seen in your own studies, you're widely read in church history, that when there's a real revival that gets back to Scripture, that the church often recognizes the importance of the place of Israel?
This is true, Mike. I see this very strongly in the revivals that came with the Lutheran Pietists, first of all, and Zinzendorf's movement that came out of that. They really saw this place of Israel. It was very strong. You see it in the Second Great Awakening. You see it in the Methodists had this place for Israel. It's usually forgotten, but the Methodists had a strong sense of that. So this rediscovery of the importance of Israel in the last days oftentimes accompanies revivals. There was a major revival in Norway, in the southeast of Norway, 140 years ago, and that revival brought this deep consciousness of the importance of the salvation of Israel, and that tremendously influenced the Norwegian Pietist movement as well at that time.
And you've spoken in quite a few nations today where churches want to connect with Israel, want to connect with Jewish believers in Israel, which is kind of an unprecedented new thing.
Yes, it's amazing. We see this with the Koreans, with the Japanese, We see it with Africans, with Brazilians. Now we're finding the leaders of the Chinese underground church coming up to Israel to have that relationship with loosening. They're able to travel and leave China, which, of course, they couldn't a few years ago. And they have connected to us in Israel. It's quite stunning.
Amazing. Just amazing. Hey, Dan, I've got one more question for you. We've got a break, so if you could just hang on for another moment. But the Tree of Life version, it features the Jewish order of the books of the Old Testament, Jewish name for the Messiah, Yeshua, reverence for the four-letter unspoken name of God, which is here rendered as Adonai, and Hebrew terms transliterated such as Shalom and Shofar and Shabbat. So much more. I had the joy of participating in this translation as well. Get your copy, beautiful slimline leather-like edition, plus a free DVD, postage paid direct from our ministry. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks again for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I've got a question I'm going to ask all of you in a moment. The phone lines are open, 866-348-7884, because I'll be looking for your feedback. Next week, we're going to be doing some special things, offering ways where you can partner together with us and help us continue to broadcast on the radio and continue to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. My friend Dan Juster and I, we go back, to the early 1980s when we became friends and have been co-workers for several decades now. Dan, as you followed the work that we're doing, be it in Jewish outreach, be it moral, cultural issues, what would you tell my listeners in terms of the importance of getting behind a ministry like ours?
You know, I've known you, Mike, for over 30 years, and I do not know anyone who is more biblically based in everything that you seek to do. And yet, you take that biblical basis, and you don't just take it on a theoretical basis for developing theology. You put practical feet to it, and you find yourself on the cutting edge of the most important issues of our day, whether it be replacement theology in Israel or apologetics approving that Jesus, Yeshua, really is the Messiah, the divine Son of God and rose from the dead, whether you're dealing with the destruction of gender distinctions today and the importance of traditional marriage and family values, the importance of the compromises in the church to not call for revival and a holiness of life, the hyper-grace issues, which are such a disaster. There is nobody that's hitting all those most important points in calling for the reformation that you're calling, both in the church and society. So you know where I stand in my relationship with you, Mike. I endorse what you're doing everywhere I go, and everybody hears a lot about it.
Hey, Dan, well, that's very kind and gracious, and I deeply appreciate the solidarity. And I'm so pleased to see, after all these decades of all the pioneering that you've done, with the increasing favor coming towards the Messianic Jewish movement and the recognition of the importance of Israel and God's plan. So keep up the amazing work, and look forward to connecting either here or in the States. Thanks so much for joining us today,
Dan.
Thank
you, Mike.
God bless. All right. That was Dan Juster, and we were talking about the Tree of Life, Messianic Jewish version of the Bible. All right, here's where I need some input from you. Are you ready? Have you heard the charge that Adolf Hitler was a Christian? Yeah, Adolf Hitler was a Christian, and the things he did in the name of Christianity. Have you heard the charge that Timothy McVeigh was a Christian, the Oklahoma City bomber? Have you heard the charge that the mass murderer in Norway, that he was a Christian, therefore a Christian terrorist? Have you heard these charges? Have you ever looked into any of them? Have you looked into the myth, the ridiculous myth that Hitler was a Christian or claimed to be a Christian, or that Timothy McVeigh was actually a Christian, or that the mass murderer in Norway was actually a Christian, and that therefore you have this stream of right-wing Christian terrorism that is a real danger and that America should be on the lookout for. Have you run into any of those charges? Maybe you studied this yourself. Maybe you studied Hitler. Or maybe you know more about Timothy McVeigh because you looked into this. Give us a call and tell us what you found. Or, conversely, if you believe that there is such a thing as Christian terrorism. No one is denying that there have been Christians who have done vile things. No one is denying that there have been many professing Christians who are hypocrites, plain and simple, who have done vile things in the name of their faith. But the idea that just as you have a genuine expression of Islam that is radical and terroristic, that you can also have a legitimate expression of Christianity that is radical and terroristic, that is an absolutely false equation, and it's a dangerous one because it will get people looking at followers of Jesus in very, very dangerous and skewed ways. And that leads then to crazy things that can be done against Christians. I'll give you some examples. May 2012, Billy Graham, then 93 years old, he took out full-page ads in newspapers throughout North Carolina. He was addressing what was in the upcoming vote on the definition of marriage. So the ads had a large picture of Billy Graham and carried his own words. Quote, at 93, I never thought we'd have to debate the definition of marriage. The Bible is clear. God's definition of marriage is between a man and a woman. I want to urge my fellow North Carolinians to vote for the marriage amendment on Tuesday, May 8th. God bless you as you vote. So this was May 2012 saying vote for the marriage amendment defining marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Wayne Besson, who is an outspoken gay activist who's accused me of being a pathological monster trying to provoke a physical confrontation between Christians and gays. He's actually written those things and more. We pray for Wayne. He then wrote this in response to these ads. So this is Reverend Billy Graham urging Christians to uphold marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Pretty simple, right? Pretty basic. Nothing extreme about that. Just what our culture's always held to, what we've always known, what most of world history, with the rarest of exceptions worldwide, has always held to and recognized. The only definition of marriage there is that it requires at least one man and one woman. Wayne Besson wrote this. I'm a little confused here because I thought we lived in America. Yet Graham is now trying to jam his own church's rules and doctrine down my throat. The last time I checked, I never signed up for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. I don't even like his church, yet he thinks I should be forced against my will to live by its rules. Do we now make our civil laws based upon Christian Sharia? Do we have to follow his version of the Bible or be punished by the government? And if this is the case, are we really a free country? Are we really much different than Iran? Or is it only by a matter of degrees or a matter of time until these so-called Christian supremacists get their paws on all of our laws? In other words, if you are saying that as Christians we should vote based on our biblical convictions, then that is no different than Christian Sharia, that we are becoming like Iran, where we are now going to force everyone to live by our religion. But these types of charges have been thrown at us since before what Wayne Besson wrote in 2012. And John McCandless Phillips, the late former Pulitzer Prize winning New York Times reporter, pointed out how newspapers like the Washington Post and the New York Times told their readers, 2005 he wrote this, that evangelicals and traditional Catholics were engaging in a jihad against America. So conservative Christians were now jihadists. Friends, we've been warning about this for years, but this article by Warren Blumenfeld reminded me that you are going to hear this more and more. Be on the alert. When you simply say, you know, I believe it's best for kids to have a mom and a dad. Well, you know, really, even though the Supreme Court ruled, you still don't recognize that God's changed the definition of marriage. Watch it. You'll be equated with ISIS and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Oh, rejoice that you're being mocked for the gospel. But recognize societal attitudes are changing in ugly, dangerous ways.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. 2008, Marcos Melitzas, founder of the radically left-leaning DailyCoast.com, wrote a book entitled American Taliban, How War, Sex, Sin, and Power Bind Jihadists and the Radical Right, claiming that conservative Christians are the American Taliban. He said the Republican Party, the entire modern conservative movement, is in fact very much like the Taliban. And folks, I believe the folks like Marcos or Wayne Besson saying these things actually believe them. Because I don't think they're just throwing out empty words. Oh, what they're saying is completely vacuous in terms of truth content. But do they believe it? Yes, I believe they believe it. In their tactics and on the issues, our homegrown American Taliban are almost indistinguishable from the Afghan Taliban. The Republican Party and the entire modern conservative movement is, in fact, very much like Taliban in their tactics and on the issues. Oh, okay, said that, quoted that already. All right, said it twice for some reason. Okay, quite remarkable is the only way to describe that. And I could go on and on and on. 2012, MSNBC, Chris Matthews launched a tirade against vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan, calling Ryan's pro-life position extremism, saying it was almost like Sharia. Yeah, almost like Sharia. Here, I'm just looking at posts on my Facebook page in recent days. You are just as ugly as ISIS. This is posted on my Facebook page, and I asked Dr. Brown. So I asked in response, because we want to protect innocent babies in the womb, because we care about marriage and family, because we feed the poor and needy around the world, because we want the whole world to know how wonderful Jesus is, please be kind enough to explain your views. She didn't respond. A few days before that, someone else posted this on my YouTube page. Kim Davis, so the Kentucky County clerk who went to jail rather than issue same-sex marriage certificates, Kim Davis is an ISIS infiltrator in America with a mission to spread the most radical interpretation of Sharia law. ISIS needed a hero, a Joan of Arc, and they found one in Kim Davis. Now, did that fellow who posted that, who went by the screen name of Geronimo, did he mean every word of that? Is he speaking in exaggerated terms? I can't speak for him. But there are people who do believe these things, that this is their conception of Christianity. That the moment you say, well, you know, according to the Bible, oh, you can't say that. You can't bring that into the public square. Separation of church and state. Don't you know that? And when you just say, well, actually, that's not what separation of church and state meant. That's not what the founders, when it came up with Thomas Jefferson and he used certain terminology, it was to keep the state out of the church. And there was always a mingling of faith and government in American history, not an imposition of the faith on others, but a mingling together in Congress praying for divine intervention in the Bible widely used in schools. The difference between that and an Islamic theocracy would be you have religious Islamic leaders ruling by force, and everyone that doesn't obey their edicts can be put to death or punished in prison. What we're talking about is advocating in a democratic republic for our views and putting them forth. But you dare do that. Charlie, another guy named Charlie, said Kim Davis, by virtue of defying the Constitution and the Supreme Court, is no better than those men who conceived, executed, and plotted those attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on September 11th. And on and on. She is a religious terrorist along the order of Osama bin Laden and ISIS. All right, we'll get your take on this. But friends, this is the rhetoric that's out there. And a disturbing article from England, when we come back, people with no religion exceeding Christians in England and Wales. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The climate has changed dramatically in recent years. The climate has changed dramatically in America. And as my friend Professor Darrell Bach said when I had him on the air last week talking about his new book, How Would Jesus Vote, that in the past we could point to the Bible and say it's true because it's in the Bible. In other words, if we were making a point, say, hey, this is what the Bible says, the emphasis being it's true because it's in the Bible. He said now we have to change our argument to the general public, to the world, and say it's in the Bible because it's true. Change, atmospheric change. 866-34-TRUTH. You're going to hear this more and more. Radical Christian terrorists. You Christians are no different than ISIS. As obscene and absurd and ugly as that is, look, we've seen in the political campaigns now, you just get a slogan out about somebody. You get a meme out. You associate a person's name with something, and it's hard to shake. It's hard to shake. Well, I don't mean that we can't shake these things personally. It's like water off a duck's back to us. I mean that in the eyes of the world, we have these obstacles to overcome. So this report in independent.co.uk, Alexandra Sims, on Monday, the rising proportion of people who describe themselves as not ascribing to any type of religion considerably outnumbers Christian people in England and Wales, a new study has found. In 2014, 48.5% of people said they had no religion or were, quote, nuns, compared to 43.5% of people who identified as Christians. And let's remember that a lot of those who identify as Christians are Christians in name only. Now you begin to speak up for the gospel. Now you begin to stand up for your faith. And you are in an unusual position in America and England in terms of one that can increasingly be viewed as a minority position. Now, in America, those who would say they have no religious affiliation, what are they, maybe 15% as opposed to, you know, hardcore atheists and things like that? But maybe it's 15-20% of the population that would either be completely God-denying or saying, we have no religious affiliation. You still have well over 70% of Americans who profess to be Christian, but because it is often a shallow, skin-deep Christianity, and because of the acts of radical Islam, when we stand up for what's right, we're not beheading people. Around the world, Christians are being beheaded. We're not forcing people, if you don't pray, if you don't observe the Sabbath, if you don't do this or that, you're going to be flogged, you're going to go to jail. No, these things are being done by Islamic extremists to others who will not go their way, including fellow Muslims around the world. We are standing up for life. We are standing up for marriage. We are standing up for family, and we're willing to pay a price to do it. We're not here to take life. We're here to give life, and yet the rhetoric will be, you are no better than terror. You're just like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. It's out there. It's not enough to call us bigots and homophobes and transphobes. It has to go further. We've been warning about this for years, but it's getting more shrill these days. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Tinton Falls, New Jersey. Mike, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, always a pleasure. Keep fighting the good fight, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As you know, the scripture says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side of that is, cursed is any nation whose God isn't the Lord. And you can see Europe and you see America, okay? Because as Martin Luther King would say, a person who's not going to stand for something is going to fall for anything, okay? And you can see that Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela were originally called communists, okay? Because the devil deals in lies, okay? And we got conning conservatives who will embrace a racist like Trump, okay? And you got lying liberals who will be for civil rights except for an unborn child, or they have no morals in terms of a right and wrong in terms of any kind of biblical standard. So this nation is the great whore of Babylon, Revelation 17 and 18, and it's like in Peter, those refugees, they're actually the holy nation, okay? Because they don't have an actual flag. Okay, their flag is the cross of Jesus, and they're multi-ethnic, they're multi you know, lingual and everything. They they're persecuted. Even though, as Paul said, we're not doing harm to anyone. Or Jeremiah said, I'm not doing anything to anybody. But everybody curses me.
It's an interesting thing, Mike. And by the way, if anyone wants to respond to any of the comments that were made about line liberals or racist Donald Trump or anything like that, feel free to call in. You could, Mike expressed his viewpoint. Others can express theirs. I want to focus on this point, though, Mike, that you mentioned. Really, what is it that Christians are doing in other parts of the world or in the ancient world? What were Christians actually doing? What are we actually doing that's producing the persecution? What have the Christians been doing, say, in Iraq and Syria, who've been slaughtered and mowed down and exiled? They're just being Christians. I don't mean they're perfect people, but I mean they got persecuted for being Christians. And as Mike referenced, Peter writes that we're aliens, we're strangers, we're resident aliens. We live in this country. We are citizens here, but it's not our ultimate citizenship, or it's not our ultimate homeland. Why all the hatred? It would be one thing if we were engaged in terrorist types of acts, if we were engaged of taking over the nation with religious clerics in the leadership and enforcing our religion on the entire nation. It's another thing when we're seeking to honor the Lord. Here, you work in front of an abortion mill and you share the gospel there and reach out. You can be loving, compassionate. You can be a young mom with your kids there, and people will curse you up and down and threaten you. And you're saying, hey, there's a better way. Or, hey, have you looked into the option of adoption? Or can we help you and your family in any way? And you will get ridiculed and reviled. It's a spiritual battle. It's a spiritual battle. And that's what we must understand. Mike, thanks for calling and weighing in. 866-34-TRUTH. So let me go back to this article by Dr. Warren J. Blumenfeld. And Matt, you know, we should see if he'd like to come on the air and discuss these things. He seems to be an educated man and serious about his convictions. He speaks of the Crusades and the acts of the Crusaders. We do understand that there were atrocities committed in the midst of the Crusades, but for the most part, the Crusades began as defensive wars to retake land that was taken by Muslim invaders. There is a context to the Crusades. Let's also remember that it's 1,000 years from Jesus. 1,000 years from Jesus until the Crusades. Whereas when you look at radical Islam, the practices of radical Islam exist right from the beginning. The practices of radical Islam, the violent acts, the enforcing of Islam on others, those were in the early days of Islam and have been there through the centuries. Plus, you have numerous texts in Islamic literature, in the Quran and Hadith, that can support radical Islam. Others would look at those texts differently, but you have these texts. You don't have that in the Gospels. You don't have that in the epistles. You don't have that in the New Testament, the teaching of Jesus. You don't. But Dr. Blumenfeld points to the Crusades, and I've renounced the Crusades. Others have renounced the Crusades, aside from recognizing that there was war being fought against Muslims in those days and seeking to retake land from Muslims. I understand that. But listen to what Dr. Blumenfeld writes. Hitler was a radical Christian terrorist, as was the entirety of the Nazi Party. He asks, which news outlets called Timothy McVeigh, the convicted perpetrator of the Oklahoma City bombing of the Alfred P. Murr federal building on April 19, 1995, a radical Christian terrorist? Well, the fact is, he wasn't. He wasn't a radical Christian terrorist. He was a white supremacist. He was not in any shape, size, or form a Christian man. That's why he wasn't widely reported as a radical Christian terrorist, because he wasn't. nor were there Christian texts of terror on which he could rely, as opposed to in Islam. He said, who referred to the illegal occupiers of federal lands for 41 days in Oregon, led by Ammon Bundy, as radical Christian terrorists? Same answer there. What were their texts of terror from the Christian Bible? And what were they doing in the name of Jesus that was in harmony with Christianity and that was going to lead to violent confrontation with the government? When was the last time we heard members of the myriad so-called white supremacist groups like Ku Klux Klan and RU Nation called radical Christian terrorists? A little closer to home there. The problem is they have no Christian support for what they're doing. They are white supremacists, plain and simple, who abused the cross.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let's take a look at the words of Jesus, Yeshua. I'll be reading from the Tree of Life version of the Bible. The answer to the charge of Christian terrorism, that when Ku Klux Klan in the past, or some more contemporary, I'm sure they're still there, but more contemporary white supremacist group does something in the name of Christian identity. You know, this is who we are, and it's atrocious, or it's vile, or it's calling for violent acts against others. This is why they are not Christian. Yeshua says this: blessed, meaning truly happy, are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. In other words, you're not going to be the ones doing the persecuting. You're not going to be the ones on the attack. You are going to be the ones being attacked for your faith. Listen to what the Lord says as he sends out his disciples, his talmidim, as he sends them out. He says, be as wise as snakes, but as harmless as doves. Matthew 10:16, behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Not as wolves devouring sheep, but as sheep in the midst of wolves. And then he says this: a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It is enough for the disciple to become like his teacher and the slave like his master. If they've called the head of the house Beelzebul, the devil himself, how much more the members of his household? So do not fear them, for there's nothing concealed that will not be revealed, nothing hidden that will not be made known. And he says, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Instead, fear the one who is able to destroy both soul and body in Gehenna. You're not the ones killing people. You might be killed, but you're not the ones killing people. Here, listen to this. You've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And listen to what Paul writes as he addresses these themes. Look, he was persecuted. He was beaten. He suffered greatly. Did he argue for retaliation? It's one thing in the midst of a war to defend yourselves. So, for example, if America was invaded by some Muslim army, it would be right for us to defend ourselves in the midst of war, for sure. And if you can't defend yourself, you can flee. That doesn't mean that now as Christians that we go around into areas looking for someone who might persecute us so we could blow their brains out. No, that's not what believers are going to do. So this is what Paul writes. Listen to this in Romans chapter 12. Again, reading from the Tree of Life version. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Repay no one evil for evil. Give thought to what is good in the eyes of all people. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live in shalom with all people. Never take your own revenge, loved ones, but give room for God's wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says Adonai. Rather, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For by doing so, you will heap coals of fire upon his head. Apparently a metaphor for deep repentance or shame. Verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Here, one more example of how we are to conduct ourselves, this time from 1 Peter. And listen to what Peter says here. 1 Peter, talking about how we respond to persecution, to opposition. Look at what he says. He's calling slaves to follow the example of Jesus, but calling all of us to. He says, for you are called to this because Messiah also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his footsteps. He committed no sin. There was any deceit found in his mouth. When he was abused, he did not return the abuse. While suffering, he made no threats. Instead, he kept entrusting himself to the one who judges righteously. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree so that we, removed from sins, might live for righteousness. By his wounds, you were healed. How do we respond? Evil for evil? Attack for attack? No. Overcoming evil with good. Blessing those who curse us. Not reviling those who revile us. And all the more, not beheading people who won't convert to Christianity. But friends, the accusations will be out there. Let us, by our behavior, by our attitude, by our words, let us refute these false and ugly and dangerous accusations. Some years back, one of our friends, a biologist, PhD in biology, who's with the Lord now, she was participating in a pro-life event with a number of other ladies. And I believe it was in upstate New York. She had traveled there from Maryland, if I'm correct in the location. She was part of this event, and all of the women that were there, the men that were protesting, that were sitting peacefully in front of the abortion clinic, they were arrested and put on a bus to be taken down to the police precinct, just to be processed and basically moved on. And somehow, a pro-abortion woman was arrested as well. They thought she was one of them. And they're all handcuffed on the bus, and she is sitting there quaking and shaking like a leaf. She is terrified because she is on the bus with all of these horrible women, these hateful, horrible, dangerous women. That's what she thought. She's terrified. And they begin to love on her and tell her the truth about who they are and share the gospel with her. And she got wonderfully born again. I mean, isn't that the plan of God? Isn't that the way the Lord works? She got wonderfully born again and became a follower of Jesus when she met real Christians. So the accusations are going to come, the equating us with the Taliban, with Al-Qaeda, with ISIS, with Hitler, with the KKK. That's all going to come. You can expect it. And when it does come, you wear it as a badge of honor, because it comes because of your association with Jesus. But now, overcome that lie with the truth and demonstrate what real followers of Jesus look like, sound like. Let's live this out and make an impact. My bottom line together, our words are important, but even more, the testimony of our life will make Jesus known to a lost and hostile world.
All right, is it time for evangelicals to just say Donald Trump is our man and we throw ourselves in with him?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So there's some really interesting discussion taking place among conservatives and among believers. There are conservatives like David French, Attorney David French, who are advocating for someone else to jump in to give us an alternative to Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And he's written an article as a longtime friend of Mitt Romney saying, Mitt Romney, run for president. Then you have voices like Dennis Prager, conservative talk show host, author, with his response to his conservative Never Trump friends, urging them to abandon their Never Trump stance. Then you have men like conservative radio host Steve Dace saying that if you get in bed with Donald Trump as evangelical Christians, you're making a terrible, terrible mistake. Then you have folks like another conservative journalist, Mona Charon, saying that, look, if Hillary Clinton's elected, it's not the end of the world because the Republicans can resist. If they have the majority, they can resist her radical appointees to the Supreme Court and so on and so forth. Now, I would hate to put my trust in the Republican Party to hold back what Hillary Clinton might want to do, to be candid. But there's a lot of this discussion going on. And less than a month from now, was it June 21st? There was a meeting with could be 500 evangelicals, maybe more. Some of the best-known leaders in the nation, meeting with Donald Trump, not to formally endorse him, not to attack him, but to do their best to really probe who he is, what he believes and why, where he's going to stand on issues that are important to us. I did get an invitation from the meeting. I'm not sure how the invitations were sent out, but a colleague said that I was invited and sent me the invitation. I'm going to be in Australia then, so I can't be there. I gladly would have if I could have, but be in Australia. And I wouldn't go in there with a hostile mentality. I wouldn't go in there with a mean-spirited attitude. I'd go in there really listening and trying to discern because, look, any politician worth his or her salt is going to tell people what they want to hear, right? To the extent they can, they're going to tell people what they want to hear. And whether they believe it or not, they're going to say it. So I would expect him to have all the right answers. The question is, would he hold to them? In other words, would these be his actual positions or would these be negotiating positions? Remember, he's now backtracked from certain things he said that rallied a lot of the support, a lot of the extreme things that he said that got everybody behind him. He's now basically said, you got to negotiate. And in other words, if this piece of property in my estimation is worth $1 million and you're selling it for $1.4 million and I'm a negotiator, I might come in and say, all right, I'll give you $600,000 for it. That's crazy. You know, and they think about it, we'll come down to $1.2 million. I'll give you $800,000 for it. No way. Your goal is to get them to meet at $1 million. So is that what Donald Trump is doing? Listen, I hope that whether he is sincere or not, that he'll end up doing the right things if elected. I hope that whether he understands what it means to be a Christian or not, that he'll stand up for many Christian values. That's what I'm hoping for. But I want to give you some of the reasons that folks are saying just get behind him. Reasons folks are saying not to. And then going to do something very interesting. My friend Sid Roth wants to discuss with me publicly my questions about Donald Trump. He came from a private meeting with him with a few other leaders recently and deal with some of the common objections that come up as to why many said, look, I couldn't vote for him in good conscience. So amazingly, Sid and I, evangelist Sid Roth, soul winner Sid, we're going to have a political conversation right here on The Line of Fire a little bit later in this hour. 866-34-TRUTH. If you're a Never Trumper or you're in the Trump camp, call in. Tell me why.
God of light, hear our cry. Send God by. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
God help these people. Not talking about politics for a moment here. I was sent this article earlier today. I've been documenting this stuff in recent years. I documented some in Outlasting the Gay Revolution, documented some on my video and article on the man who became a woman, then a mythical dragon. But we just posted on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, the man who lives dogs, quote, we're just the same as any person on the high street. Joey, you need to go to my Facebook page and check this out. human pups like to live in packs, play with squeaky toys, eat from bowls, and nuzzle their handlers. Ahead of a new documentary, Spot, Bootbrush, and Kaz open up. Those are the dog names. Oh, you got to see the picture. You got to see the picture. Trust me. I wish I could just broadcast this out. Everyone, if you're driving in your car, sitting at work or home, wherever you are, jogging and listening, wherever you are, I wish you could see this picture. Oh, my God, help these confused people. Also on the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, my testimony, newly recorded, enhanced with sound effects and written text. That's what an amazing job was done on this by some of my friends with One for Israel, I Met Messiah. It's getting viewed a lot. And I can't believe the job they did, the editing and the putting the whole thing together. What a production. Wow. Watch it and share it. That's all at the Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. 866-34-TRUTH. So here's what Dennis Prager has written. If you're a never Trumper, under no circumstances would you vote for Donald Trump. Feel free to call in and share why. If you're an evangelical who feels there's no question that God is going to use Donald Trump or that he's the man for the job, feel free to call in and share why you hold this. So here's what Dennis Prager says in his article, a response to my conservative never Trump friends. He gives 9 reasons why beating Hillary Clinton trumps ideological purity. So let me give his list here, all right? He said, here then are 9 reasons, there are more, why a conservative should prefer a Trump presidency to that of a Democrat. 1, it would prevent a left-wing Supreme Court. 2, it would increase the defense budget. 3, it would repeal or at least modify Dodd-Frank. 4, would prevent Washington, D.C. from becoming a state and giving the Democrats another 2 permanent senators. 5, it would repeal Obamacare. 6, it would curtail illegal immigration, the goal that has nothing necessarily to do with xenophobia or nativism, just see Western Europe. 7, it would reduce job-killing regulations on large and small businesses. 8, would lower the corporate income tax and bring back hundreds of billions of offshore dollars to the United States. 9, continue fracking, which the left in its science-rejecting hysteria opposes. Prager says, for these reasons, unlike my friends, I couldn't live with my conscience if I voted in any way that helped the America-destroying left win the presidency of our endangered country. I just don't understand how anyone who understands the threat the left and the Democrats pose to America will refuse to vote for the only person who can stop them. Now, Dennis Prager has frequently spoken out against Donald Trump. He said, I devoted many hours of radio and many columns to criticizing Donald Trump. His virtually assured nomination has therefore caused me grief as an American, a Republican, and a conservative. That his character defects, gaps in knowledge on some important issues, and having no set of identifiably conservative principles came to mean little to many Republican voters has been quite troubling. And he says, never Trump conservatives such as, in alphabetical order, Jonah Goldberg, Bill Kristol, Ben Shapiro, Brett Stevens, and George Will are not merely people I admire. They are friends and colleagues. He said, but in the final analysis, I do not find their arguments compelling. Now, Dennis Prager is definitely more politically savvy on wider ranges of issues than I am. There are things that I understand well. There are things where I'm quite sure I could give very helpful information to Dennis Prager on moral and cultural and social issues. But government as a whole, politics as a whole, America in terms of these types of political issues, Dennis Prager is far more astute than I am. And some of the items on his list, I'm not deeply familiar with. All right. For example, for the fracking issue, I just haven't followed that in depth to give one example or looked at the arguments pro and con. The obvious question is, would Donald Trump actually do all these things? Do we know that he'd lower the corporate income tax and bring back hundreds of billions of offshore dollars to the United States? I would think so, based on what he says and who he is as a businessman. But would he? I don't know. Would he repeal Obamacare? Would he seek to replace it with something worse? I mean, these are fair questions to ask. So some might say, well, the list is too long. The list is too idealistic, although no one could accuse Dennis Prager of being a Trump idealist. Well, what about just the first one, prevent a left-wing Supreme Court? Wouldn't that in and of itself be enough? Wouldn't it be enough to just say Donald Trump has given a list of justices, obviously with help from the Heritage Foundation, people that he would like to appoint, people like Justice Scalia, although Justice Scalia is a rare bird in terms of everything that he brought to the table. He's put that list forth. We could be 100% sure that none of those people would be on a Hillary Clinton list, as sure as we could be, and that people whose views would be radically different than ours in many, many critically important issues would be appointed, and that could throw the nation into social chaos. So just for that reason, that's been Prager's strongest argument, just for the Supreme Court, shouldn't people vote for Donald Trump if they are conservatives? Well, here's how Mona Charon responded, not directly to Dennis Prager. Let's see, his article came out, I mean, they're right around the same time, but she was not directly responding to him. I think her article came out right before his anyway. She says the past few days have featured hectoring demands of Never Trump people to get over it. These have come not just from the more bullying precincts of Trump fandom, as in get on the Trump train or get run over, but also from party regulars and office holders suggesting that failure to endorse Trump now is a kind of stubborn self-indulgence. Quote, while you sit out, Hillary gets elected, huffed one of my critics, she says. Yet if there's a binary choice, not completely clear as of this writing. In other words, could it be that there end up being three candidates? Or someone's just suggested you could end up with four. But let's just say it's a choice between Hillary and Trump. It is possible that voters in swing states who declined to support Trump may be assisting Clinton. This is not a secret. Some Never Trump voters may have to live with that miserable outcome rather than violate their consciences by voting for an authoritarian ignoramus. That's how she characterizes Donald Trump. And she gives her arguments. She gives her arguments and says, look, there are other ways to look at this. I just read Dennis Prager's point. Let me give you some of hers. She said, one of the points the Never Trump people have stressed is that there were two equally painful possible outcomes of a Trump nomination. He loses or he wins. They're both disasters in her view. She said the Democrats remain the majority party in presidential contests, having won five of the past six popular votes. They begin with an average of 247 to 196 electoral college advantage. That said, Hillary Clinton may well be the only major political figure in the country who could possibly lose a general election to Donald Trump. So what do you say then if really he could beat her and keep her radical pro-abortion, radical pro-LGBT extreme activist positions, her other positions that may not be as a socialist as Bernie Sanders, but would further reinforce the president's health care system, Obamacare, etc. What about that? And she says, well, listen, if Hillary Clinton is president, a united Republican Party will oppose her. Assuming Republican control of the House, she will not be able to pass a single piece of liberal legislation. She may attempt, as she has promised on the campaign trail, to rule by executive order in the manner of Obama. If she does, there will be a pushback by Republicans. Just this month, a federal judge ruled in favor of the House of Representatives in its suit against Obama's use of executive orders in the implementation of Obamacare. If she nominates terrible judges to the federal courts, a Republican Senate, assuming Republicans hold the Senate, could decline to confirm. But that's the problem there. Could decline to confirm. Would they? I don't have a lot of confidence in the backbone of the Republican Party these days. And if they would be the ones stopping Hillary Clinton if elected, I don't have a lot of confidence that they'd do it with consistency. What do you think? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friend Sid Roth is going to be joining me in a couple of minutes. And he wants to encourage evangelicals, conservatives, to consider voting for Donald Trump. And as much as he recognizes that Donald Trump is not a Christian, Donald Trump does not know the Lord, although he thinks of himself as a Christian. Sid wants to give reasons why he believes voters should vote for him. I am not a never Trumper telling everyone don't vote for him. During the primaries, when Senator Cruz, Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio, and others were candidates, I sounded strong alarms. I raised all of my concerns as to why he was not the man that we wanted to elect. As the Republican candidate. I say we, I'm an independent, but that's the only way I could vote because of the stances of the Democrats and their worldview and their ideology and things like that. But I made clear I'm sounding these alarms as we have other options. Now that we don't have other options, at least as it appears that we're looking at most likely Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, I am not urging you not to vote for him. I don't know that I could. If the election was today, I still don't believe that I could in conscience vote for him. And I'll interact with Sid on it. But I'm not on a campaign telling everyone not to. There are others who are raising strong concerns. One is my radio colleague on the Salem Network, Steve Dace. And he has written an article on conservativereview.com. Dear Christian leaders, you're playing a very dangerous game. And he with humility thanks Christian leaders. He honors them, and he says that the letter is coming from a place of concern more than criticism. He said he struggles with a critical spirit, which is why he's waited several weeks before writing the letter, and he started and stopped several times. He wanted to make sure his heart was in the right place. So he says, if you are supporting Donald Trump or flirting with doing so, you are playing a very dangerous game. There is simply no moral, biblical, or even strategic case for doing so, near as I can tell. And if I'm wrong, then let us come now and reason together. So he says, first thing, holiness and character is of more value in the kingdom than ideological correctness. And, you know, those who say, well, Donald Trump is just like David, because David committed adultery and murder. David was contrite. David was in agony. David pleaded with God for mercy and recognized the depth of his sin. And not only so, although God forgave him, and although David served the Lord with distinction in so many ways through the rest of his life, before that and after that, the whole nation did suffer as a result of his sins. On the moral level, according to Steve Dace, Trump is a scam artist, a gossip, a slanderer, a misogynist, an adulterer, a deceiver, a liar. You say, yeah, but I like his policies. The question is, what are his policies, really? Or if elected, what will be his policies? You say, okay, look, here's the deal. It's like the Let's Make a Deal show. And this is me. It's not Steve Dace here. You've got the Let's Make a Deal. And you've got the two doors. Behind door number one, behind door number two. You're going to pick. Behind door number one, you know, is a box filled with poisonous snakes. So you don't want door number one. Behind door number two might be $1 million. It might be a box full of mud. It might be a box full of tarantulas. It might be a key to a new car. You don't know. Which do you pick? You pick door number two, right? Obviously, because you know what's behind the other. Whereas door number two, maybe you'll get some good. So that would be the argument that, yeah, maybe he's a deceiver and a liar and a scam artist and he can't be trusted, but maybe he will do what he says. Right? That would be the argument. So he says on a strategic level, he said there are three archetypes of politicians in the scriptures. Josiah, the true statesman, Hezekiah, the typical politician, Ahab, a pure megalomaniac, whose only motivation is his own ego, elevation, and experiences. And Hezekiah was a statesman and a politician in a negative sense. Hezekiah did a lot of good, but then had some weaknesses. I wouldn't just brand him as a typical politician, as my friend Steve does here. Ahab, a pure megalomaniac. According to Steve Dace, Trump is an Ahab. He's not like anything we've ever dealt with before. He's not a rhino, Republican in name only. He's not a Republican or any other kind of Hezekiah type. He won't even pander to you on the bathroom issue when it would help him. Why? Because you're all nothing but marks to him. He is utterly and undeniably shameless. He's the sort of figure we read about in history books, not a raving madman Hitler type, and those making such comparisons are intellectually lazy and should be dismissed. Nor is Trump even the kind of megalomaniac Obama is with his Soviet-era-style ruthless pursuit of Marxism. Rather, Trump is merely a conqueror convinced that if he's calling all the shots, the world would be a better place. He is a law unto himself. In our day and age, alpha males are few and far between, Steve Dace writes, so much so that many believe Trump is an alpha, but he's not. Like most tyrants, he's deeply insecure, and he goes on to back that up. And anyway, his point is, if you elect an Ahab, it will destroy the nation in other ways. If you elect an Ahab, it will drag down the nation in other ways, so that both of the choices are wrong, and you have to do other things outside of one of these two choices to do what's best for America. That's what Steve Dace says. That's his position. So we'll discuss that. We'll let my friend Sid give his viewpoint. And if you're a never Trumper, under no circumstances could I vote for Trump, or I still am reluctant to vote for Trump, call in, tell us why. If you believe Trump is the man and you've been a longtime supporter, or believe there's even a prophetic destiny or something like that, give us a call. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. I'm holding in my hands the Tree of Life version of the Bible, produced now by Baker Books. And, oh, let's just see. Isn't this sweet to open to John 4? Yeshua offers living water. It just his name Yeshua there. Suddenly the whole context jumps out a little bit more at you. He says to the Samaritan woman, "What you do not know, we worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews, the Jewish roots of the faith." You're reminded of that on every page of this Bible. Now that Baker has taken over the distribution, not only have they put their stamp on it, but they have now produced some beautiful new editions and versions, and we are really, really blessed to get these in now. The first printing sold out. First printing sold out before it was released. The response was 50 times greater than expected. The first printing sold out before the Bible was even released, the official release in Jerusalem next week. It's a beautiful, slimline, leather-like Tree of Life version of the Bible. When you order it, you get a free DVD from us, and we're paying the postage. Take advantage of this. Get as many as you want. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Order as many copies as you want. You will not be disappointed.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
One of the things that I love about Line of Fire is that we can talk theology one day, we can talk politics the next, we can focus on Israel the next day, we can talk about moral and cultural issues the day after that, and it's what I often hear from our listeners. One of the things that you enjoy most is the variety of what we cover. And I love it when people come up to me and say, you know, when I see something happening in the news, I know you're going to be covering, I know you're going to be articulating what I feel, what I want to say on your radio show, in your articles, within the next day. So since the elections are ever before us, we're going to have an interesting discussion now. Sid Roth and I have been friends for over 30 years. I first recorded my testimony on his radio show back in 1984, the first time I was on his radio show. You've heard his radio show for years. You've seen his It's Supernatural TV show. And when Sid and I talk, we're talking about winning souls. We're talking about Israel. We're talking about salvation. I mean, we talk about these things all the time. Maybe a Bible question, maybe something that the Holy Spirit's doing. But Sid and I recently had a discussion about Donald Trump. And I said, all right, Sid, let's have this conversation on the air. So without further ado, maybe the one and only time you'll hear a political discussion between Sid Roth and me. Sid, welcome to the Line of Fire.
I'm very excited to be on with you. By the way, you know that when you shared your testimony, it ended up in a book called They Thought for Themselves, of which we have distributed over 3 million to predominantly Jewish households throughout the world.
Amazing.
I mean, despise not small beginnings, you know, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's in multiple languages, right?
That's correct. 10 languages.
10. Wow. I knew of 3 or 4. I didn't know about 10. Incredible. So Sid, you were on a couple weeks ago sharing some amazing things you're seeing with Jewish evangelism, souls coming to the kingdom. But you recently were in a small meeting with Donald Trump and some other Christian leaders, and you have been one that was planning to vote for Trump for some time now. So we've got a couple minutes in this segment, then we can expand, and then I've invited my listeners to call in if they agree or disagree with you. But what's your bottom line reason with recognizing Donald Trump's weaknesses and recognizing that he's not a true Christian and his track record and all the things that can be brought against him? Why are you openly saying we need to vote for him?
Okay, for starters, if someone is a Christian based on experiential knowledge, there's very little likelihood they can be president of the United States. Now, if they're a churchgoer, they can. So my spin is this. I saw something by the Spirit. It's sort of like before I was born again, before I ever became an evangelist, I was a good salesman. Do you know why? God put that gifting in me. And then when I came to know the Lord, I could use it for his glory rather than for my glory. And same thing with Donald Trump. The first thing that I noticed about him after God really gave me a desire to learn more about him, and this was when he was first starting to run for president, was his family. I mean, anyone that's had a couple divorces and has children that are so together and love him, and you know the key word, Mike, honor him. I don't know if you caught this, but I caught this. So there's something in his heart, and this is what I believe by the Spirit is true. I believe that he has a father's heart, as illustrated in his relationship with his sons and daughters. But I believe that he has the potential in him. There will come a point, number one, I think he's going to win.
Well, tell you what, I'm going to jump in. You can develop this on the other side. Friends, if you agree with Sid, feel free to call. If you're in the Never Trump camp and feel it's a disaster if you vote for him, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH.
Fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Speaking of testimonies, there is a brand new production of my testimony. I went to New York City to film it for One for Israel, I Met Messiah videos. They did an unbelievable job editing this, adding music and sound effects and background and putting captions up with it. It's amazing, and it's starting to take off online already. To watch it, go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. If you are in the Never Trump camp, under no circumstances could you vote for him, even if someone would say, well, it's a vote for Hillary Clinton, feel free to give us a call. If you're a passionate supporter of Donald Trump, give us a call, and we'll grab some calls to interact with my guest and friend, Sid Roth. So, Sid, you were saying that when you saw Trump's family, that you noticed that they honored him, which would mean that those who were closest to him saw some redeeming qualities in him. I guess that you would say you just can't buy that with money. You can't buy your family's allegiance.
No, but I saw, and actually I had a chance to meet Donald Trump personally and meet his one of his sons personally, and it's real. I can tell you there's honor there. So what I see, Mike, is he will win. Now, so I'm not prophesying this, but that's what I see. And somewhere within his time of being president, we all know this, there's going to be a horrific time coming, whether it's terrorism, whether it's the economy, whether it's race relations, whatever it is, there's going to be, he's going to have to get on his knees. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but his grandfather was one of the prominent names in the Hebrides revival. And I believe he's got that revival gene inside his genes. It's passed on to him. And I see him on his knees in the White House with a horrific occasion that that all of his positive thinking, Norman Vincent Peale, it's not going to help him. And he is going to be touched by God. I see a tenderness deep within him to be sensitive to God. He's not there now. No. Don't mishear what I'm saying. But I'm telling you, I see that. Now, on a pragmatic basis, I don't know anyone else that says he'll build a wall and will do it, will be able to do it like Donald Trump. And that alone, by having no control over immigration, no control over terrorists coming into our country, that alone is worth him being president. But then there will be anywhere from 1 to 3, as you know, Supreme Court justices appointed. I like his list better than the best list that the Democrats will ever come up with. And then the abortion issue. He is against abortion, and he has personally said that with Planned Parenthood, he would only fund things like mammograms and stuff like that. But no problem. They don't do that. Most people don't know it. They don't even do that. So he has said he won't fund abortion with Planned Parenthood. As far as Israel goes, he has stated he will have the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. And I want to just applaud through the rooftops, shout through the rooftops when I heard that. And I believe that the reason he says said he wanted to be neutral is he wants to make a deal, like every president, most of the presidents before him, to have peace in the Middle East. And he'll get the Nobel Peace Prize. But you and I know he's not going to be able to do that. And so he was just doing his deal-making style. But I believe he will be the greatest president in the world against anti-Semitism and against anti-Israel sentiment. We certainly know the Democratic position as of these times right now. As far as the military, I think the greatest prevention of having an invasion and having our enemies not come after us is a strong military. I believe he'll be a great, strong military man. And as far as the economy, I would much rather have him than any Republican or Democrat we've had in the past to change the economy.
Let me jump in, and we've got our phone lines lit up here.
Okay.
Let me throw a couple things out, though. Does it disturb you that he has given completely contradictory statements to different groups depending on who he's talking to, or completely reversed himself on a position sometimes three times within 48 hours with blatant reversal, then repudiating one thing, repudiating another thing? I mean, if he's trying to cater to conservatives, he knows he needs conservative votes. Why would he say anything different than he's saying? But even he says, look, he wouldn't want to fund the bad things that Planned Parenthood does, but they do a lot of wonderful things. Who in the world that's pro-life would ever say a good word about Planned Parenthood if you're really pro-life? So doesn't this give you cause for concern in terms of we really don't know who he'd be and what he'd do if elected?
Well, I think he's given us some bottom lines, and I do know the bottom lines on the Democratic side. And I'll throw the question right around back to you, Mike. Would you rather see the best Democrat in the world, or would you rather see Donald Trump in the White House? And I know your answer. Of course we'd rather see Donald Trump in the White House. I'm saying for an unsaved, now I can't even say he's unsaved because I don't know that. But I do know for someone that is not really knowledgeable of the Bible, he's acting the way I would expect him to act. Now, am I happy over it? No. But I think he's thinking on his feet. I do think that he has been consistent saying that he is anti-abortion, pro-life, his list of Supreme.
Yeah. I know the list.
I see what you're saying.
Here's the other, the larger concern. If you have someone that could be out of control, that could have power like no other person in the world other than the President of the United States has, that could potentially lead us into an unnecessary war, could alienate allies, could downgrade the culture of America just to the vulgarity and insults, that just like the Bill Clinton presidency and his scandal with Monica Lewinsky definitely lowered certain sexual standards and mindset, that someone said, at least with Hillary Clinton, we know it's going to be all-out war, the Republicans are going to have to push back against her, and Christians are going to have to wake up. With Donald Trump, it could be destruction in another direction. But tell you what, let's get some callers to interact. I'll let them state their view briefly, and then you can respond. We'll start in Wichita Falls, Texas. Renson, if you could give your brief reason why you will not vote for Donald Trump, and then I want to give Sid the opportunity to respond.
All right. Me personally, I'm a truck driver. I would not vote for Trump. Reason being, because first and foremost, he's a very cocky individual. All he cares about is making money, and I'm not really worried about his political view or like where he stands politically, because the guy's just wrong. Reason being, he's constantly insulting. He's insulted women. He's insulted the Mexicans, and the last thing you need is someone of his stature, persona, whatever, to get up there at holding the position of a president and then turn around and say something against Muslims, to say something against any other nation, our allies, and especially Israel. That's a big no-no. God holds Israel to high standards. And you don't need a president or someone like him to sit there and say we're going to play it neutral. No, Israel is our best ally, and that's the only one we've got, and that's the only one we really need. But
let me just jump in because I want to get to a few more. But thank you, sir, for weighing in. On another day, we extended a bit. Sid, what about the fact that God resists the proud, that Donald Trump seems to be all about himself, and that he could do some things that could be disastrous as a president?
I don't know too many people that have been president that aren't arrogant and proud. And I believe he's going to come down to his knees. But the truth of the matter is that all humans unless they're really sold out to God. And I have to tell you, I know a lot of people that are Christians that aren't as trustworthy as I would like. But the truth of the matter is God's in control. The truth of the matter is there is no way in the world anyone can convince me that it isn't supernatural that he's going to be our candidate for president. I mean, the people he defeated should have won,
yeah,
and he should have lost. I believe it's God's hand. And yes, all the things that disturb you, Mike, and the guests that just called, they disturb me too. But I can just tell you that they're all flawed individuals.
Got it.
I mean, everyone talks about, well, why can't we get a President Reagan who had a witch in the White House, for a psychic in the White House?
I tell you
what's wrong with everyone.
We got a break. Hey, listen, this is why we're having the discussion. And by the way, Sid, I hope you're right. I absolutely hope you're right. I'm not trying to tell everyone don't vote for Donald Trump now. I hope you're right. All right, more of your calls. We come right back. Hey, this is Michael Brown. I want to invite you to join me for our second ever trip to Israel, February 25th through March 6th, 2017. This is a great opportunity I get to interact with you, our radio listening audience, and our ministry partners as we experience the land of Israel together, and it will be a life changer. We've got a great price on the trip, and if you're one of our monthly supporters or torchbearers, you're eligible to receive a special discount for this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Space is limited. We're accepting applications on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information on the trip to secure your spot, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the Israel banner, or call our office at 704-782-3760.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Who would expect it, talking politics? Well, politics is not separated from other areas of life, with my friend Sid Roth, who believes that we should vote for Donald Trump and that God will use him in many positive ways. Sid, all of our phone lines are jammed. I want to get to some more callers in a moment, but super quick, I talked to some other colleagues who were with you in this recent meeting with Donald Trump. They said the same thing that others have said who met with him privately, that he was very humble, that a completely different demeanor than the public persona. That could be looked at as positive, or it could be looked at as negative, that there's an extreme double-mindedness, the one that's kind and nice and humble and listening, and then the guy who gets up publicly and trashes others. Does that schizophrenia concern you?
I can tell you this, that if I go with my mind, then I can have a list why I like him, why I don't. But if I go with the Bible and my spirit, why do I say and my spirit? Because God puts presidents and kings in office. Mm-hmm. And if I go with my spirit, if I go with my mind, I can find enough good things about Trump compared to anyone else that I want him. But if I go with my spirit, I'm telling you, Mike, I think he has the most potential of a man that will be sensitive to hearing God. He's not there now, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you by my spirit, and I'm telling you by my mind, you have two choices. Not vote, or vote for someone that you know can't win. So three choices. Or vote for a Republican or a Democrat. And I think that that American blood has been shed for the right to vote, and it's totally irresponsible to not choose the best for one purpose, so that we will have a country that can do what it's called to do, and that's preach the gospel to the four corners of the earth. I see more chance of our country being great under Donald Trump than I do under the best Democrat that could run.
Got it. All right. Loud and clear. Let's go to Greensboro, North Carolina. Isaiah, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. My problem with Trump all along has been that I view him as petty and vindictive. And I've had to, because he's running against Hillary, I've had to develop a technique that will allow me to get past that. And I don't mind sharing it. I take my thumb and my forefinger and apply it strongly to my nose and pull the lever for Trump, because I cannot vote for Hillary.
Got it. So you would ultimately feel before God that you could do that with conscience. In other words, that on some level you are responsible, let's say you get selected, that you are a participant in that. So it's unpleasant to you, but ultimately you could say, I feel it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. I have abhorred what has happened to our country. I'm a black American, and I just abhor what the first black American president has done to our country, and I fear what will happen if we then have to suffer through 8 years of Hillary. So with all that and my strong convictions as a Christian, I just cannot and will not vote for Hillary Clinton. So it's got to be Trump, and I hold my nose.
All right, loud and clear. And you speak for many others in that regard as well. Let's go to Frank in Des Moines, Iowa. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks. I'll be brief. No matter how principled your vote is, a vote that's not against Hillary is a vote for Hillary. And I have no problem with people voting their conscience with the Never Trump, hashtag Never Trump. But if that's turned into an active campaign debating, that's where I have an issue. And there's a guy out there named Lance Wallenau.
Lance Wallenau. Mm-hmm.
And he puts forth the idea that Trump's Scottish grandmother brought him up in the tradition of John Knox, and that basically Trump was going to be a sledgehammer to the papacy. I just wonder your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing. And I appreciate the call, Frank. Okay, in candor, the spirit of John Knox type thing on Trump, I mean, I look at him as anything but a John Knox, to be honest. However, the idea of him being a divine wrecking ball, which is something that Lance Wallenau has said, Dr. Wallenau, there's a whole lot of stuff getting smashed. Now, others have said someone else is going to have to come in after Trump and rebuild. I mean, we shall see. Let's go back. Sid, we've got limited time. I wish I could get to more calls. Most that I'm looking at on the screen say that they will be voting for Donald Trump / the Republican candidate. You know Dr. Lance Wallenau. We know there are all kinds of prophecies out there. We've seen him for years. Some of them are accurate. Some of them are not. It's dangerous to base a vote on someone else's prophecy either direction. But your views, we got about a minute, Sid, your views that were pro-Donald Trump, were they influenced a lot by words like Lance Wallenau, or this is something you came to independently?
I came to it independently. You know, there's a word I haven't used yet in describing Trump. I see Trump will be a great patriot. And mm-hmm. I, unlike many of the people I even interview, I see potentially the greatest season for evangelism, the greatest season for America to prosper under a Donald Trump. Yes, I see the pitfalls, but I see the potential. I see zero on the other side. I see zero for people that refuse to vote.
Got it. And the argument that could be brought is that the only way awakening is going to come is if everything goes down around us. But then do you vote for a candidate that's going to bring everything down? Even if I believed that things were going to have to get worse before they got better, I wouldn't personally vote for someone that I knew would make them worse. Hey, Sid, you're passionate. Like you said, before you were saved, you had the gift of salesman. Now you use it for the Lord. You've made your case loud and clear for others to hear. So factor these things in. We've got months before the elections. We need to be praying for all the candidates. But, Sid, thanks for joining us, and keep winning our people to Yeshua.
That's my passion.
Yeah, I know it. All right, so we have our one and only political discussion. But like I said, Sid, I hope you're right. I absolutely hope you're right. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Well, friends, I wish I had time to get to the rest of your calls, but we are out of time. Look, we'll have plenty of time to discuss these issues, and you can give me your take on what my friend Sid had to say, pro or con. My bottom line today, boy, it's good to know that we serve a God who sets up kings and removes kings. Gives you a little peace of mind in the midst of the chaos. Hey.
change the world.